Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
If I'm playing a game on my phone or on my computer, I'm typically playing some sort of simulation. I'm the general manager for a baseball team, or I'm running my very own airline. And I'm not entirely sure why I'm drawn to these types of games. Maybe because in some alternate reality, I could do these things in real life. I could trade Joe Mauer for a bunch of young prospects. I could buy a Boeing 777 so my customers can get to the UK without having to stop first in Amsterdam. But what if life as we know it right now is a simulation? What if we are the game that's being played? On today's show, reporter Luke Walashek explores this very theory. But first, producer Jackie Renzetti gets some fresh air and takes us down the Mississippi River, while Hannah Weichel hits the streets and finds out what people can't stop collecting. My name's Patrick Sharkey. You're listening to Real College Podcast.
When you think of the Twin Cities, you probably picture the skyline and all of the urban energy that comes along with it. But we also have our very own national park in the Mississippi River. Multiple times a week, a riverboat called the Minneapolis Queen immerses passengers in one of the city's hidden gems.
You see boats like on the river, but you never like think like, wow, I want to be on that boat, you know? But once you're out here, you have a great time and you definitely want to come on here.
That was Ben Bookie, a University of Minnesota student who's working on the boat this summer. He says customers climb aboard for various reasons, from weddings to corporate events to public tours. For some, the riverboat provides a place of refuge and a reminder of natural beauty in the middle of the work week.
I hate the cities. This is what I would do all day, every day if I could be out on the water. I mean, who wants to drive a car on a freeway with millions of other cars? I'd rather be out here on the water, and it's so much prettier. You see so much more when you're not in a car.
Other passengers came to bond with family and friends. Frank Noel came with a group he calls Last Man Standing.
We are a group of people who went to St. John's Prep School and graduated in 1958. And we have a group called the Last Man Standing Group. We get together once a year, and we have done so for 18 years. In this particular time we had together was to put the ashes of one of our friends who had died a few months back, who was a member of our group, and we put his ashes in the river pursuant to his request.
For younger passengers, the river offers new discoveries.
I haven't seen a bat nest, and it was up on a bridge near the shore, I guess. I don't know how to explain. I think my favorite part is just watching the river as we go and watching how it's flowing and all the waves that bump against the boat and stuff.
Captain Verdi has been operating boats since 1995 and has been doing river cruises on the Mississippi for 4 years.
It's fun. It's nice to be doing something that Mark Twain and a bunch of other guys did a long time ago, so it's kind of interesting that way. And so you're part of history, and we're probably the last two boats on the upper Mississippi area that are actually doing it now, with the Paradise Charters, Minneapolis Queen, and the Paradise Lady.
Even after doing the same stretch so many times, Verdi says he learns enough each week to keep coming back.
There's always something new happening. Like right now, we've got the Franklin Avenue Bridge. We'll be going underneath, and they're doing a lot of construction on that area. The bridge is getting a facelift, basically, and made safer, new bridge decking. So you look at that stuff. There's also wildlife, and the customers are always interesting. Sometimes they're a little too interesting, but that makes it kind of fun, too. So, doing that, and I just the love of boating. I've been a boater my whole life, so it's just something that I love to do and actually making money doing it. So that's what I like to do about it.
Whether it's someone taking a break from Twin Cities traffic or someone just doing their everyday job, the Mississippi River attracts people for all sorts of different reasons. For Real College Podcast, I'm Jackie Renzetti. This is Hannah Weichel bringing you this week's question of the week. On Friday night, I waltzed into the Basilica block party and found out that I could get away with not paying because I must have looked official with my recording equipment. I also probably showed up on at least 6 random people's Snapchat stories that night as I was asking, what do you collect?
What do I collect? I don't even have a collection. I used to collect baseball cards and basketball cards, but I haven't done that in 25 years. I guess I got too old. However, my wife's stepfather still has quite a good collection, so that's not really a great excuse.
I collect movie ticket stubs from all the movies I've been to, so then I can look back and see the exact dates I've seen things. But I leave them in purses, old purses, so whenever I grab one and trying to look for something in it, I usually grab an old movie stub and be like, oh, in 2006 I saw Public Enemies. So
I collect Snoopies. Well, I used to go to Camp Snoopy a lot as a child, which my parents referred to as Snoopy Land. That's not what it was called. I put them at work, so I think people think I'm really strange.
So my question is, what do you collect?
Can I say children?
You know, yeah, I collect random, like, outdoor crap. So any kind of outdoor gear, knives, guns, camping equipment, compasses.
Mistakes. Super good at making bad decisions and screwing stuff up. Seriously, my collection, I can't even fit them in the rooms I have. They're overflowing into our yard. They're in our neighbor's yard. They're like, what is this bad decision you made when you were 17? Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't fit it in my attic. It's just, it's overflowing.
I collect rocks. I collect, like, things that I see around the house, and I just kind of, I'm kind of like a collector. I really like to collect stuff.
I have a small collection of hats. I inherited that from my grandfather. He collected a ton of hats.
So. Okay, so you have some of his old hats then?
No, my other brother had a little more foresight than I did and offered to buy him a quarter apiece for my grandfather when he decided to get rid of his. So no, I have a smaller collection than my brother.
What do I collect? Oh, okay. I actually collect Hard Rock Cafe pins. I have a friend that I travel with. We started doing the Spartan races this year, and when we travel to Arizona, Seattle, and Montana together, we stopped in Seattle at the Hard Rock, and we spent like 30 minutes of him looking at all the pins that they have. And I was like, dude, hurry and pick one. And then he kind of got me onto doing it. So now when I travel to a big city, I buy a pin there. It's just kind of in remembrance that I've been there. Instead of buying a t-shirt, you know, something big, you know, a little pin, you know, it's just like the size of a index finger, you know, whatever.
Well, I used to collect beer cans, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did that for years. I have a rather large collection, about 2,300 cans or so, and all different beers, and they're actually, some of them are very old, flat tops and cone tops from, you know, the early 50s, 40s, you know.
So necessarily beers that you actually consumed here.
No, you know, I wasn't old enough to consume them at that time. I was like 12, you know, so, and I'd roam around and find beer cans, and it was a lot of fun.
And do you still own that collection?
I do. It's actually in boxes in a storage shed, but I still have it. I just haven't found the opportunity to kind of set it up somewhere, you know, and display it. But
there's a sort of a philosophic concept that a sufficiently advanced civilization will be able to create
a simulation.
Yeah. Maybe you've answered this before? A simulation.
I've had so many simulation discussions, it's crazy.
Okay. So the idea is, right, any sufficiently advanced civilization could create a simulation that's like our existence. And so the theory follows that maybe we're in the simulation. Have you thought about this? And
a lot.
Are we...
40 years ago, we had Pong, like two rectangles and a dot. That was what games were. Now, 40 years later, we have photorealistic 3D
simulations with millions of people playing simultaneously, and it's getting better every year. Mm-hmm. And soon we'll have virtual reality, we'll have augmented reality. If you assume any rate of improvement at all, then the games will become indistinguishable from reality. So given that we're clearly on a trajectory to have games that are indistinguishable from reality, and those games could be played on any set-top box or on a PC or whatever, and there would probably be, you know, billions of such, you know, computers or set-top boxes, it would seem to follow that the odds that we're in base reality is one in billions. So tell me what's wrong with that argument.
Is the answer yes?
That was Elon Musk fielding questions at this summer's Code Conference. Despite Musk's lack of attribution, the Tesla co-founder seems to be drawing many of his points from a 2003 essay from the University of Oxford's Nick Bostrom, titled The Simulation Argument. Bostrom's theory can be summarized as follows. If there were a substantial chance that our civilizations will ever get to the post-human stage and run many ancestor simulations, then how come you are not living in such a simulation? He argues that at least one of the following propositions is true. 1. The human species is very likely to go extinct before reaching a post-human stage. 2. Any post-human civilization is extremely unlikely to run a significant number of simulations of their evolutionary history. Or 3. We are almost certainly living in a computer simulation. Musk and the others who argue that we are in a simulation are operating on the belief that the third proposition is true. But does it hold up as concretely as Musk seems to believe? Where are the flaws in his argument? Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, an ethicist and philosophy professor at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, is not convinced. He's more interested in the second proposition, that is, whether or not a post-human civilization would be interested in running these simulations.
Most of these arguments about us living in simulations are being stated by people who believe in this notion of transhumanism, which is posthumanism. It's the same. They're pointing at the same thing. But to be a transhuman, it seems to me, has to be something more than just humans as we currently know them with just a very high level of technology. That to me just sounds like humans with hyper technology. Transhuman should be something greater than human, something more than human, something that's got some feature that not normal humans would have. What evidence is there that transhumans are going to have anything like the desires, intentions, or beliefs that we currently do? I mean, the closest example I can give maybe is like, what on earth makes me think that me and Neanderthals would be even be close at having the same sort of interests at all?
Beyond just a lack of interest, Dr. Hudspeth has reason to believe that transhumans would have serious ethical objections to running these simulations.
It would mean that you'd have to create a simulation in which a universe existed, which a world like the planet Earth existed, in which you would necessarily cause harm to lots and lots of conscious, sentient beings. And that just sounds radically unethical. And I cannot imagine the possibility of a transhuman species, that I mean something that's moved beyond us, that they're so technologically advanced and so intellectually advanced that they are considered to be a kind of different species from us in the same way that we are different from Neanderthals, and yet their morality is apparently no better than our own. That just sounds implausible to me.
For Dr. Hudspeth, it's not a question of if these simulations are possible. It's a question of why an advanced society would ever bother to run them. Dr. Hudspeth thinks Musk and others who believe we are in a simulation are avoiding that question altogether.
Again, thinking about someone like Elon Musk, I suspect that what it does is it's more evidence that, like, the belief there is that as technology improves, that technology resolves all moral questions. And yet, there's been no moment in human history in which that's been true.
From the cotton gin to the atom bomb, all new technology brings with it a unique set of moral dilemmas. To Dr. Hudspeth, simulations capable of imitating real life are no different.
These are the kinds of questions that I think philosophy as a discipline is just really good at dealing with, right? Because at the moment there does not exist a test that we can come up with that can even tell whether or not we're in a simulation or not, right? So there's no empirical results that are going to solve this question. We need something else that's going to solve this question. And philosophy as a discipline is the thing that's that's just what we do.
For Radio K, I'm Luke Walachek.
For the Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePayne, bringing you this week's Word on the Street. On Monday, the Paper Kites will be playing at the Triple Rock Social Club. Doors open at 7:30 for this 18-plus event. The Melbourne five-piece first formed in Turnheads in early 2013 with their Woodland EP, which was closely followed by their Young North EP and their States LP later that year. They quickly became one of Australia's best-loved live acts. Their latest record, titled 12-4, is a concept record based around the theory that an artist's creative peak is between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m. From 12-4, here's the song Revelator Eyes. On Tuesday, the Wombats will be playing at First Avenue with special guests Coast Modern. Doors open at 7:30 for this 18-plus event. The Liverpool natives' third and most recent album, Glitterbug, is what they call their reconciliation, saying that if the first album was luck, the second album was rebellion, then Glitterbug will be the album that defines them. From Glitterbug, here's the song Greek Tragedy. We're smashing mics in karaoke bars. You're running late with half your makeup on. This method acting might pay our bills, but soon enough there'll be a different role to fill. I love this feeling, but I hate this part. I wanted this to work so much, I drew up our plans on a chart. Cars are flipping, I'm in hot pursuit. My character's strong, but my head is loose. She On Wednesday, Tiny Deaths will be playing at the 7th Street Entry with special guests Ronia. Doors open at 7:30 for this 18-plus event. Grant Cutler of Lookbook and Claire DeLune of The Chalice have created Tiny Deaths in an attempt to create a fresh take on the darker, more brooding electropop that's taking over the modern indie rock scene. With catchy, danceable beats but intricate and delicate lyrics, Tiny Deaths are poised to be the next breakout act from Minneapolis. From their EP Nightflowers, here's the song The Gardener.
Walked out of the right sun to the wrong shade with the right one on the wrong day in the right spot at the wrong time. Wrong heart, right mind. And I know now that it won't help if my heart was in the right place when my body
On Thursday, Swans will be playing at the Fine Line Music Cafe with special guests Ok Young Lee. Doors open at 7:30 for this 18-plus event. After restarting Swans in 2009, Michael Gira didn't know where it would lead, let alone that it would take him through what he calls to be the most consistently challenging and fulfilling period of his musical life. The band's most recent release, The Glowing Man, is the fourth and final recording from this configuration of Swans, with a level of complexity and scope that is hard to envision. From their album, White Light from the Mouth of Infinity, here's the song, Love Will Save You.
Love will save you when the ocean splits itself in two, and love will save you when the cold wind blows right through you, and love will save you when the poison eats the precious air, and love will save you from the snake that crawls around down there, but it won't.
That's it for this week's Word on the Street. For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePain.
Real College Podcast is produced by Jackie Renzetti, Max Fuller, and Emily LePain. Managing editor is me, Patrick Sharkey. And contributing to today's show was Luke Walaszek, Jackie Renzetti, Emily LePain, and Hannah Weichel. And a reminder that if you haven't already, subscribe to our show on iTunes. And remember that you can always listen to the show as it airs live every Sunday at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. To play us out is this week's weekly release spotlight. It's Minor Victories with 100 Ropes.
Take a look. Never thought this could happen.